What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, October 25th, 2021. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the Hispanic heartthrob, Texas treat, Latino heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds. He's the globetrotting, headshotting Nitro Rifle from twitch.tv, Andy Cortez.
You nervous, Tim, to be on the show?
No, I'm feeling good now. It's a different day. Last time I was like, oh, you know, getting the butterflies. Today might be one of the most epic news days in Kinda Funny Games Daily history. Like, I don't know how we're going to fit it all in. We have so many stories, and we're going to get to all of them. Some of them we'll cover more. Some of them we'll cover less. Some of them we'll just be like, hey, here's the news. You do with it what you will. But it's going to be a damn fun time. We got Snowbike Mike hanging out as well. He's going to add his thoughts on some of the news stories, which I'm very, very excited for. We got Barrett running the show. It's just a whole bunch of fun going into this beautiful Monday, everybody, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, where each and every weekday we get together to talk about all the things you need to know in video game news. You can get it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, or you can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or roosterteeth.com. We like to give you options. If you want to listen to it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. If you wanted to get the show ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like our Patreon producers Pranksy and Blackjack have done. We appreciate you all so very, very much. We're brought to you by DoorDash, DraftKings, and Liquid IV, but we'll get to that later. I want to tell you a little bit about housekeeping, Andy, because we got a lot of fun stuff going on. Later today, we got the Arkham Files episode 3 coming out, premiering on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames at 2:30 p.m. It's all about Arkham Origins. Barrett and Roger worked very, very hard on this. Very excited to check it out myself, and I hope you guys will join me. On top of that, we got a whole bunch of stuff live right now. You can watch Andy and Mike's live reactions to the Halo campaign overview that we'll talk about later in this episode, but you get to watch their genuine live reactions over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And also, our Guardians of the Galaxy Gamescast review is up with a rare appearance by Daddy Greg Miller himself.
Whoa!
Yeah, coming out of retirement just for the one time only to review Guardians with us. That's me, Bless, Mike, and Andy on the episode. Again, we'll talk a little bit about that stuff on this show, but you should check that out. Fantastic episode with a lot of divisive opinions, which is always a fun thing to have here at Kinda Funny. On top of that, we will be playing Guardians of the Galaxy for the rest of the week, pretty much from Tuesday to Thursday. We're partnering with NVIDIA. Andy is going to be playing through for the first time because you haven't really touched the game yet, right, Andy?
I fired it up just to test DLSS, and then I texted Tim, and I was like, DLSS is running like a dream. It's purring. It's purring, Tim.
Love it. I love that, Andy. I don't know. Whatever.
Like
it is what
almost.
It is. Yeah, exactly. I'm excited to see Andy play it, though, this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then on Friday, we're doing a big Mario Party Superstar stream to declare who the new CEO of Kinda Funny is, because that's the type of company we run here. And then in review on the Kinda Funny side of things, if video games aren't necessarily your thing, which doesn't make sense because you're watching this show, doesn't matter. You can go to youtube.com/kindoffunny. We got three in reviews this week. We're kicking off Ghostbusters in review. We're going to return to Edgar Wright in review with Last Night in Soho. And we're continuing our Spider-Man rewatch. You can watch our Spider-Man 1 rewatch. It's almost 3 hours featuring Anthony Carboni. It's absolutely insane. What do you have to say about that episode, Andy?
I feel like I'm still in it, Tim. I don't know if it ever ended.
Peter.
It is one of the better pieces of Kinda Funny content. IMO, I think it's definitely a classic that has been recorded, so you can go check that out. But enough of that. We have a huge news day, so we have to get into what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 12 stories today.
A dozen.
You gotta love it. You gotta love when you have a dozen stories. Like I said, some are bigger, some are smaller, but we're gonna get to them all, baby. Starting with Guardians of the Galaxy reviews are in. An 81 on Metacritic, Andy Cortez. An 81. Got an 8 on IGN, a 7 on GameSpot, an 8.5 on Game Informer, 6.5 Destructoid, 8 Easy Allies, 8.5 on Push Square. So divisive, but not that crazy, right? We're still kind of in that like 8-ish realm. Like some people like it a little bit less, some people like it a little bit more, but we're kind of at that solid 8. That even that, I gotta say, it's really turning me
up.
I'm pretty surprised, you know, going into this. I thought this game was kind of doomed from the start just based on our assumptions of how the properties have been treated recently with the Avengers and kind of how this game was announced formally just months ago and is coming out. All of that kind of led us to believe like, ooh, this is not necessarily going to be a slam dunk. Are you surprised at all?
I'm pretty shocked that they are that high, Tim. I know that we did a Gamescast a couple of weeks ago, and during the post-show, the Patreon-exclusive post-show, we talked about what games we're looking forward to for the rest of 2021, and all of us had Guardians at number 5 or even higher than that as an honorable mention, because there's other games we're looking forward to more, and I even said, like, hey, I'll play this, and I'm kind of excited for it, but if it decided to go, like, if it got indefinitely, you know, put on hold, I wouldn't really care a whole lot, because I never thought that it was going to be a fantastic game by any means. I thought it was going to be, 6.5 out of 10, a pretty good game, above average game, but I listened in for a bit of the Gamescast review, and you guys seem pretty excited about it.
Yeah, me in particular, I was very, very into it. The one thing that I'll say is that the gameplay is good. I don't think that this game is bad in any ways. I think there is a lot of ways it can improve. And I don't think gameplay wise, it does anything fantastically. But in terms of characters and in terms of story, it absolutely nails it. I will go as far as saying that this is as good of a Guardians of the Galaxy story as Insomniac Spider-Man is a Spider-Man story. Whoa. And like, that is pretty much the highest praise I can give a superhero story-based narrative linear game. I was very much surprised by this, but you can go check out the Gamescast for all of our opinions and way more in-depth thoughts. I wanted to read a little bit from IGN's Tom Marks, who gave it an 8, saying, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy nicely balances a goofy, action-filled adventure with some genuinely heartfelt story moments, and the choices you're given can add some surprising personal twists to your particular playthrough. Its combat and level design are relatively simple, if still consistently entertaining, but it's the relationships and banter between its characters that keep everything fresh as they evolve. It isn't going to set the world on fire, but Guardians of the Galaxy is still another convincing example of how much fun a linear, no-frills single-player campaign can be. Could not agree more. I think he said that very, very well. This is a very linear game by design, and I think that that adds to the experience and kind of keeps the gameplay is always a thing that's just kind of something you have to do to be rewarded with the next story beats, and they come at such a great clip that I think it's a real damn good time.
I was going to say, go listen to the Gamescast to hear why Greg Miller not so hot on it.
Yeah,
very, exactly. Very surprising to me.
Yeah. Greg was definitely the lowest on it compared to any of us, but he still did enjoy it. But it kind of fits into this kind of range we're seeing with these reviews, where it seems like Greg's more on the like Destructoid, almost GameSpot side, where I'm definitely more on the IGN side. GameSpot's Jordan Ramey gave it a 7, saying Guardians of the Galaxy doesn't feature an engaging combat system, save for the moments where the team huddles, provide a loose connection to the much more engaging narrative theme of the strength of communication. The game instead shines via its storytelling, which is enhanced by a talented collection of voice actors and a wonderful soundtrack. If this game is your introduction to the titular heroes, it's not the best first impression, but sometimes when the galaxy needs to be saved, you can settle for good enough. So, yeah, Andy, where are you at going into this, like hearing all of this?
I mean, you mentioning that the story is fantastic and it's on par with Insomniac Spider-Man, that gets me really jazzed up. I want to see an above average story being told and experience cool moments with characters and having those back and forths. I think that's something that you had mentioned. One of those things that I think the game does well and definitely above average is the characters' interactions and it feeling not overly cheesy and not trying to be too much like the MCU, but it kind of finds its own little pocket to exist in. That's what I'm stoked about. Looking at it, the gameplay does seem very much like Marvel's Avengers. It does seem like this sort of beat-em-up thing, but with the added selecting your kind of battlefield here, I'm going to select this character to do that, select that character to do that. How close is it to Final Fantasy 15 in terms of combat or Final Fantasy 7 Remake?
Very close to Final Fantasy 7 Remake. I would think that it is nothing like the Avengers gameplay. It is very much like Final Fantasy 7 Remake. It's a bit simpler. It's kind of like comparing Pokemon to like a more hardcore JRPG, where it's like it's a simpler version of what you get in Final Fantasy VII Remake. There's a stagger system. You're kind of controlling your team to do different moves, but it's less active in the sense of you, and we go into this way more in the review, but it ends up a lot of the button mashy type stuff comes from directing your comrades to do different things. Like that doesn't feel that deep. It kind of does feel like just a bunch of face buttons attached to different attacks. Yeah. That the combat never kind of forces you to need to think too strategically about how you're using your team, which is kind of a bummer because it's definitely a cool system. It's just kind of like doesn't ever make creatively use the system. And so you end up just being like, well, why would I do all that stuff when I could just hit this button a bunch of times and win?
How are the cosmetics, Tim?
They're awesome. The outfits are awesome. They're plentiful. There's a ton of characters, obviously. It's all the Guardians, and they all have a great amount of costumes that you're finding throughout the levels constantly. It really rewards you for exploring because you just find them in the levels. And I think the levels are, since they're so linear, they're very well designed to kind of guide you to want to look for the surprises. And once you kind of understand the kind of logic of what they want you to do, you kind of realize, oh, I bet you there's a costume in there. And that is such a great incentive to go out of your way. Because every time you get a costume, it's like, oh, shit, this is cool. And I found myself constantly being like, all right, I really want my Rocket wearing this outfit, but I want my Groot wearing that one. But they don't look good together with that. So what am I going to do? And I love that. Like, that's such a great reward.
Do they each, similar to how Ratchet and Rivet had their own kind of like, here's the pirate theme one, here's the whatever theme one, the galactic thing, and they all have a galactic version or whatever the hell?
Yeah, pretty much. There's like the different themes of like the different, like based on this comic line or based on this, or like what if this, like they all have it. Star-Lord has the most, and he has a couple that are just like designed just for him, and a lot of them are fucking awesome. So goddamn rad. There's one I was rocking that's just like a blue leather vest, and I'm like, that's my fucking boy. Let's go. But yeah, there's a lot of really cool options, and I think that the different costume options are surprising for how fun they are, and again, how frequent and how early you get the ones that you kind of want. Wink, wink, nod, nod. If you are worried about not liking how they originally look at the start of this game.
I'm really interested to see what the sales are going to be on this game, because I feel like marketing has been kind of quiet.
Yeah.
I know recently I've started seeing ads pop up on YouTube, but for a while there, I feel like this game just kind of crept up on everybody. And we all say, well, it's a Marvel game. Of course, everybody knows Marvel. Everybody's going to want to get the Marvel thing. But is it the thing that kids are going to be asking for at Christmas time? Like, I don't know.
I don't think so. And it's, I think, kind of a bummer, because like this game is kind of a dream game for me, which is like, hey, let's take a Marvel IP and just have a linear game that is very good with an excellent story. Like, this is what I wanted Avengers to be so badly, and it just simply wasn't. And Greg and other people like that game for what it is, but I really just wanted what Guardians ended up being, and I'm so surprised. What we saw of Guardians, I was always like, there's a chance this is just kind of what I've been asking for, and I'm very happy to say it definitely was. Mike, I know you're waiting there. You want right to give here, any brief thoughts on where you're at with Guardians?
No, Tim, you've done a really great job of talking about it. I think a lot of the reviews hit on where we felt it would be, between that 7 and 8 area. And I'm happy to see it get some solid 8s, because it is a really great game. I had a ton of fun with it. I was the most high on it out of our games cast. And I think Tom Mark says it so well. It's like, this is a fun single player campaign with a solid story, no frills, no nothing attached to it. You're just going to have fun. You're going to be wowed by some of the awesome moments and cameos, and you're going to have a good time with the banter and the rock and metal music. So yeah, I'm very high on this game. Super pleased. I am like Andy. I look forward to seeing what the sales will be moving forward. But all in all, I'm really pleased, and I'm happy with Eidos Montreal and what they did.
One thing that I think is great is that even though we're all a little bit mixed on how exactly we felt about the game, all of us are excited for the potential of a sequel. Like, there is so much there. And like, if they just keep this direction in terms of characters and story and just kind of tighten the gameplay and make it a little bit more exciting in places, they got something really, really, really special on their hands.
How much does the decision and dialogue options really factor?
It's hard to tell, because I don't know what experience other people had. It seems like, from our conversations, it seems like it's not like it's going to drastically change the game, in ways of like the story's going to be completely different, and you get an ending where it's like that character died, but in my version it didn't. It's not like that, but what I think it does very well is it is all about what the game's good at, which is little character moments. So it's instead of getting a great character moment between Rocket and Groot, you're getting one between Gamora and Drax or XYZ. So it's like they do really, really matter for what the game is trying to deliver you. So it's less kind of narrative plot things. It's more the difference in character dynamics. And I was fully, fully invested. And I felt bad when Rocket would be mad at me. Like, I made my choices going through the game. I'm always going to try to please Rocket. Like, he's my boy and I want to be cool. And when he like was like, Star-Lord, like, oh my god damn it, I've let you down, Rocket. And like, that's investment, you know what I mean? That's so cool. It's like the choices mean enough that I care about them. And you do see the ramifications of things throughout the game constantly. And in some ways that surprised me. Like, it was a little deeper than I expected. Not much deeper, but even just that little bit made me go, huh, okay. They knew what they had this game and they delivered on it. That means there's a lot of other things that they didn't necessarily like. They didn't change the game on anything. There's nothing we're doing in this that we haven't seen before. But
anyways. Really quick, I do want to say I kicked him out of the phone call late last night to go full spoilers with Greg. I will say, Andy, that Greg had a different ending than mine. It wasn't gigantically different or like groundbreaking, but his ending was different than mine, funny enough. So some of these choices that you do make will matter later on. And it is pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see.
I'm really excited to watch you play through on Twitch because I want to see what choices you make and how different they act. Like, it actually changes some of the little tiny things. So that's cool. Next news story, moving on. More reviews are in, this time for Age of Empires 4. It has an 83 on Metacritic. IGN's Lena Heffer gave it an 8. Age of Empires 4 plays it safe a bit too often, but really excels when it wanders outside of its very traditional comfort zone. The expansive campaigns and offbeat factions like the Mongols and the Rules are major highlights, even when it loses some of its sharpness to a small unit cap, frustrating pathfinding, and relatively unimpressive graphics for a 2021 game. And then WCCF Tech's Chris Ray gave it a 9, saying Age of Empires 4 is in almost every way a true sequel to Age of Empires 2. It plays great and has a few new features that add more tactical elements to combat and how you develop your faction. On factions, it truly allows them to differentiate themselves from each other. There are slight issues, such as the population cap that feels very restrictive and the lower quality of unit models, but these are minor in what is an otherwise outstanding game and one where an undeniable amount of effort and work has gone into, which includes hours of documentary-style clips to support the campaign. So anybody that wants more Trebuchet stuff, it's going to deliver for sure. Jokes aside,
less, Mike, bro.
Mike, you've been playing Age of Empires. Yeah. So one of the reasons you're popping on the show is to give your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm really happy I was able to jump on. You know, this is one of the big Microsoft first party releases, and I've got about 5 hours into it now playing pre-release over here. And I've had a ton of fun. I'm happy to see the community really celebrating this. I'm happy to see the positive reviews. And, you know, so far, my first off impressions are really positive. It is more Age of Empires. So don't go in thinking that we've changed the wheel here. It is Age of Empires, but it's a ton of fun to be back in this franchise that you know and love from the early 90s, right? That's how long this has been around. And it's awesome to be in the rock, paper, scissors, unit choice battling system once again. And I love everything that Age does, but I do want to reiterate, just like these reviews have said, and you can go more in depth on all these other people's reviews, but what they've done with the campaign and what Relic has done to elevate that presentation value really goes a long way. It actually is exciting to play. It's fun to go into the next campaign level and get this cool documentary style video with 3D assets over it and have an awesome history lesson. I was really impressed. I know we were down on the Trebuchet during the presentation, but funny enough, I can't stop clicking on the Trebuchet videos now in the unlockable content. So every time you beat a level in the campaign, you will unlock another extra video. Every time you start a campaign level, you have a cool video, and it's really, really informative, fun, educational stuff. And the way they weave it all together through the campaign missions and keep you like listening, engaged, really, really well done. So I am very pleased with Age of Empires on my early first impressions right now.
Very, very cool. Moving on to the next news story, because there's a lot to talk about, a lot of huge news. Like, this is one of those days that we have multiple things that would be great headlines. Like, that's rare. So thank you, gaming news gods.
Thank you,
this
gamers.
One, I am so excited to talk to you guys about because I missed your reactions this morning, but I watched it myself. Halo Infinite campaign gameplay overview has been revealed. Andy Cortez, I want to start with you. What did we see and what do you think about it?
We saw a bit more as to what the story is going to be. We were introduced to a couple of new enemies and potential bosses. We got a lot of hints as to what the campaign can be and how it can be structured in a way. The open world, I think me and Mike are kind of in agreement where we see it and it's like, wow, they're doing kind of enemy encampments in this gigantic open world. There's a couple of enemies in the world that are named, Tim. They have like not a boss bar up top, you know, on the top of the screen showing you what their health is, but it's just kind of floating over their head, indicating that maybe there's going to be a lot of these generals around that we're taking down, and they're just kind of like individually named. I thought it looked really, really cool. I think visually it seems to be really enhanced, but I think the coolest thing for me, Tim, was just kind of having those really neat playground moments and going to these encampments and taking them down however you want and kind of just playing around and saying, this time I'm going to go full rockets, or I'm going to get into that Banshee, jump out from the midair. And it looks like whoever was preparing the gameplay for this trailer was having an absolute blast because they were thinking of so many different ways. We got to look at what the UI is. We got to look at what sort of things we can be leveling up in terms of abilities. The thrust is back, like finally on video, official from 343, the thrust is back. It's exciting, Tim. I had a lot of fun this morning reacting to it with Mike.
Yeah, everything you're saying right there, I'm right there with you. I think that the boss fights are the most interesting thing to me. I kind of, just like you were saying, I got hyped when I saw the names pop up. It reminds me of Halo 2 having, I forget the guy's name, was it Tartarus? There was like the yes. Brute dude that I was always let down by because I was like, this is so cool. I like the idea that there's like a boss character in Halo, but your fight with him didn't really feel like a boss fight. It kind of just felt like another encounter. So I kind of like the presentation here. I like seeing that one character that has the dual wielded plasma swords. It's like they're having fun with this. They're kind of just delivering the sandbox elements of like, yo, let's just allow these people, these players, to have fun with all the fun tools that we're going to give them. I think that this is a take on Halo that I would have never expected to see and definitely would never have expected to want, but I'm kind of opening up and shifting my mind from wanting a kind of like linear campaign, or not wanting, expecting a linear campaign that's telling a story and that's it, and then you go play it, the multiplayer. I kind of am into the idea of this being a little bit more open, there being these encampments, and instead of there being this one overarching story, which I'm sure there will be, but it's more the story is what's always been my favorite thing about Halo, which is player moments, where I wonder if I could do this, grab the Banshee that way, fly off this thing, and you know, whatever. And you can.
It reminds me of Breath of the Wild.
Kind of, yeah.
Without all the obviously the elements and the water, the rain and the lightning and all that stuff. But in terms of, I see a camp down there. There's three explodable things over here, just like in Breath of the Wild. There's a bunch of bokoblins and there's three rocks that I can roll down and then throw that thing, shoot the fire arrow. There, you could just kind of create whatever chaos you want and make the fun. Instead of, you know, here's this designed experience that you are going to witness very, very kind of carefully crafted in a way. I love just being able to go in there and say, I'm going to approach this however the hell I want. And damn, I fucked that move up. But maybe if I leave, the enemies will respawn, Tim, and I could go back and kind of try to recreate whatever clip I was trying to do, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because like this reminds me a lot of how I used to play Halo Combat Evolved, the campaign. Like me and my friend Curran would just pop into co-op and spend hours just kind of fucking around with the hunters and stuff instead of playing through the level. You know what I mean? Like just trying to find fun things to do. So it's cool to me that they're doubling down on trying to make that the experience and make those moments the campaign as opposed to just going through the stuff, which it's all there. There's a lot of names, there's a lot of familiar characters and stuff, and I'm lost in the story at this point. I don't know if like this game's going to kind of get it back on track, but I don't know that they necessarily have to deliver an extremely fun experience. Mike, what did you think?
It was a great reintroduction to Halo Infinite and what we can expect as players, right? It's been some time since we really got to talk about the campaign. I know we've all been high on multiplayer, but you and Andy have touched on really a lot of the bright points, right? And I think it's always fun to see the community rally behind such a storied franchise as Halo, right? And they're taking this in a new direction of being a semi-open world type game. And this is something we've seen with Gears 5. And Gears 5 was a very, very good game. And what they created with their mini open world maps was a lot of fun. And so I'm really excited to see what Halo will be like with that. And yeah, of course, I know we're all disappointed about campaign. And like, when you see those moments at those outposts, that was designed with co-op campaign in mind, right? That is me, Tim, and Andy going in different directions, causing a whole lot of chaos and having fun. How will it feel as just one Spartan alone in a gigantic world like that? It'll be really interesting to see, right? We're coming hot off of Far Cry, which a lot of people have that kind of open world fatigue, that Ubisoft checklist that we always talk about. And now we're bringing it into Halo. And will people vibe with that? People not like that. But the sandbox is there, as Andy said, right? There's so many toys that you can play with, that you can create epic moments. We got to see some really cool day and night cycles as well. It looks good. We're excited to meet the new Cortana, aka the weapon. I can't wait to get more about the pilots. I want to know, where's Cortana in that Guardian that she flew in on? So it's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's really exciting. But yeah, it looked good. I'm really, really impressed with what 343 did. I think this is a big positive bump. I would like to see a more refined, hey, here's the story. Here's what's happening, right, on Halo Day, aka November 5th or 15th for Xbox 20th anniversary. And of course, over with Halo, it's going to be fun to see. But for right now, that is a solid 6 minutes that flew by with me and Andy. I looked at him. I couldn't even believe it was over.
Yeah. The thing that does kind of worry me story-wise is I wonder, is it a, we don't want this to get spoiled, we don't want to show too much, or we're not super confident in what we have to show. And I think that's why I was telling Mike, like, you know, a bunch of dummies like us, you know, complaining on podcasts, being like, show us campaign, where's the campaign? And you know that this has been cooking for a while. They've been prepping for this and trying to get this out. But it was still very story light. You know, we got some hints of the narrator saying kind of light story elements, right? Like, I believe it's called Halo Zeta, or something Zeta like Rim, that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I just don't really know exactly if they're holding back on story because of spoilery type things, or is there a lot of confidence in what they have to show at all?
I could see it being a
we
mix
got
of
the story trailer last time. I think this, like, they called this the gameplay overview, right?
Campaign,
so it's like,
overview.
I'm not too campaign gameplay overview, right?
Well, the story trailer you're talking about from E3 2 years or last year?
The story trailer from the first one we saw of the pilot and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, the thing, after seeing that and after, you know, a lot of mix-ups happening, I just assumed that a lot of things were changing because maybe they didn't really know the exact direction or whatever it is. I'm also could be completely talking out of my ass, but I felt like when we saw that trailer at E3, not this past year, but the prior year with the pilot and they're frozen in space and he's rescuing Chief, I thought a lot of stuff had been changed since then.
Mm. Yeah, I doubt it. I think it is what it is.
Yeah, it also might be a mixture of a lot of the things that you're talking about, Andy, because I remember for whichever Halo, it might have been the last one where, like, you're playing as the two different characters and you got a hunt Master Lock. Chief. Like, it was, like, a lot of story trailers I remember coming out in the lead up for that game coming out. And, you know,
it was all misdirection.
Yeah, and the reception to that game ended up being very mixed. And I don't know if leaning hard into the story, like, really helped with how people felt about that. So they might be looking back at that and being like, all right, like, let's lean off of the story stuff because we might, like, lose a lot of people. Let's remind people, like, what Halo was to them, what it meant to them playing it on the original Xbox in the Halo 1 and Halo 2 days. And, you know, we'll sell them on the story, like, once they can actually, like, get it in their hands and go through the motions and all that stuff. So I feel like it's probably a mixture of a lot of those things.
I just think it's weird we haven't seen a traditional story trailer. Like, again, the thing with the dude in the space, like, that's a very extended kind of look at things. Like, I'm talking about like, what's the commercial going to look like? you know, like how, what is the voiceover going to be saying? Because this isn't something you put on TV after Monday Night Football or something. What is the commercial going to look like? That's what I'm kind of wondering. Yeah, I mean,
it's interesting. You know, like the gameplay demo we saw, which like gameplay demos, mission demos are kind of like core to the Halo marketing kind of run. Like that's just how they kind of show off what this specific Halo is. And the one we saw at the Xbox series kind of reveal event, whatever that was called, ended with like, remember the one where like they're going through the Zeta Prime and we saw the grapple hook and all that shit. It ended with a little bit of the story beats with the Banished and all that stuff. But yeah, when this is all added up to me, it's like, and I don't necessarily mean this is a bad thing, but it's like, I don't think that the story is going to be great. I think it's going to be very much for the hardcore and for the people that are really into the Halo lore.
People
and to them,
the books.
It'll probably deliver a lot. I just think that with what Halo Infinite, what I think it needed to be for the general populace to really be able to latch on is a bit more reboot than this seems to be. Even in this trailer, they're specifically like mentioning Halo 5 and this being a sequel to that. So it's like that, I think, is going to be a big hurdle, because it's like that's so many games and so much lore people are going to need to know to get into this story and like really, really, really be invested. But I think that this trailer, what they showed, is kind of like, yeah, but like, it's just going to be fun. Even if you don't know what the Banished are, like, there's going to be a lot here. And I'm actually kind of excited about that, in the sense that it's like, we're not going to get this campaign that when the game comes out in December, we're going to need to like rush to beat and get to the end. Maybe we will, but like, I don't think that that's what it's going to end up being. What I do think is it's going to be more Breath of the Wild, more Assassin's Creed, more Far Cry, more just Cause, where it's like, cool, there's these encampments. And over time, I love playing Halo. I love the fun and physics of Halo. I'm going to want to 100% it, you know, and this is I like the idea that the Halo campaign might be something that I am still playing through late next year, just kind of checking things off when I'm just looking for some fun in a video game, and the still getting those kind of story beat moments that feel fun for the time at hand, as opposed to like one giant narrative. But we'll see, not too long until this game comes out, like a month and a week.
Can't wait. Give us more flights.
Moving on to the next story. Oh, Andy, this is a fun one. A WB platform fighting game, Multiverses, rumored. This comes from a user called Huge Leaker, actually, on Gaming Leaks and Rumors subreddit. So this is what they say. Got info on the new NetherRealm game. Obviously, a burner account. Not going to provide a proof to the mods or anyone, so sorry. I'm not going to risk it. But just save this post. Trust me. The new NetherRealm game is a Warner Brothers crossover platform fighter. Yes, it's a new IP technically. Yes, it is based off Smash Brothers and now Nickelodeon All-Stars. But this was in the works before Nickelodeon was even announced. It's a tag team game. Not sure if that means you pick two characters and switch between them, or if each character is actually a pair, or if each character is an individual and you only switch when you lose a stock. All I know is there's a synergy between certain characters, which implies custom teams. Characters I can confirm are in the game. Shaggy. From Scooby-Doo.
Oh, not the singer, musical artist. Got it.
It wasn't him. It actually wasn't him this time. Was it him? Gandalf from Lord of the Rings. Tom and Jerry. Batman. Fred Flintstone. Mad Max. Harry Potter and Ron are apparently in, but the rights are weird, so they stopped development on them. Question mark. Not going to lie, this may have been said in jest. And Johnny Bravo. I know some more. Go for it.
It's just the way that Harry Potter and Ron are presented in this sentence, just it makes it seem like their agents are still negotiating. like and they get asked at some interview, like, hey, Harry and Ron, you're gonna be in the game? They're like, ah, you know, we're still in talks right now. Like, yeah. I don't know why it seems like they're real people.
And then Johnny Bravo to follow it up. I know some more, but I'm holding off on sharing until the game's revealed. I can't be 100% certain that this is it, but it's worth taking a look at. At the very least, it's proof that what I'm saying isn't hearsay, but I don't know the game's name, so I can't confirm. I was sent this by an anonymous source after I leaked that I could also confirm this game exists. Barrett, if you could please bring up this trademark here.
Charles Jacobson in chat says, who on earth wants to play as Ron?
Checkmate. Yeah, there's a trademark for Multiverses being the name of the game, which is a pretty dope name. Like, I feel like it needs some other branding. Jeff Grubb already made the best obvious joke of they just need to call it Super Warner Brothers. But that's great too. And speaking of Jeff Grubb, he got involved in this and he tweeted, "This WB platformer fighter
who the fuck
is
wants
real."
To fight?
Jeff Grubb, the other character, right after Johnny Bravo. "This WB platform fighter is real, but it's not a NetherRealm game. Come on." So that makes a lot of sense. Like, NetherRealm making a platform fighter would be insane. I mean, honestly, I'd love to see that with the attention to detail NetherRealm has. Like, I would definitely rather them make it than pretty much anyone else I can think of. But this is interesting. What do you think about it?
Whatever it is, I'm excited. I saw Timur Hussein tweet out that he can't wait to beat Gandalf's ass as Batman. And Timur, you better fucking swallow those words, you piece of shit, because I'm coming after you, okay? Gandalf, you will not pass. You will not succeed. This seems pretty exciting to me. I don't know why, Tim. It seems like such an obvious thing that can happen, especially after watching Space Jam. Wow, perfect timing, Barry.
That was cool.
Especially after watching Space Jam. It just seems pretty damn obvious, and I don't know why this is something that we hadn't have even predicted or thought of in the past, but good on them if this thing actually comes out, and I'm looking forward to whatever the hell it's going to be. I'm excited to see whether the characters will join the fray. Will we get really terrible characters that have not aged well, just like in Space Jam? Possibly, Tim, possibly.
Possibly. We'll have to wait and find out. I love this. I love Smash Brothers style games. I'm happy that we're finally, after decades, they're like, you know what? We can copy it. Let's just copy it. Because it's like, thank you. Just copy it. It's a fantastic model. Like, why? We have 10,000 different 2D fighting games. Like, have some more platform fighting games. Like, come on. But I hope that this ends up being good. Like I said, Jeff Grubb saying that it's not NetherRealm. I'm like, ugh, that sucks. But Multiverses is just too damn good of a name. Like, it's so fucking good. And I think there's a lot of potential here. You talking about the kind of like IP orgy that we've seen in Space Jam, New Legacy, and Ready Player One. Like, WB clearly are excited about throwing all their fucking characters together, yeah, and seeing what happens. The one hesitation I have is the weirdness surrounding WB games right now, where it's like, this seems a little bit weird, right, timing-wise, but I hope this is real. I hope that we see it, and I think that there's a higher chance of this being good than Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl because of them owning all the rights to these characters, yes, and stuff. 100%. So I imagine there's going to be a lot more like little things like voices and stuff that kind of tie it together and allow these characters to feel more like themselves as opposed to just looking like them. But we'll have to wait and see. But for now, let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Liquid IV. Flu season is in full swing, and let me tell you, being properly hydrated makes a huge difference. That's why I use Liquid IV to stay hydrated and support a strong immune system with delicious flavors like watermelon, strawberry, and lemon lime. I've been using Liquid IV for years. I absolutely love it. It helps me stay hydrated when you're feeling a little hungover, or even if you're just kind of feeling a little groggy. This is the best way to get hydrated fast. Liquid IV uses cellular transport technology, which is a very fancy way of saying it contains the perfect balance of vitamins to help you hydrate quicker. Grab your favorite Liquid IV flavors nationwide at Walmart, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code KFGD at checkout. That's 25% off anything you order when you get better hydration today using the promo code KFGD at liquidiv.com. That's liquidiv.com with the promo code KFGD. Next up, shout out to DoorDash. We're getting close to the holiday season and things are bound to get a little hectic soon. Why not give yourself one less thing to worry about? Get dinner covered with DoorDash. Along with the restaurants you love, you can now get groceries and other essentials delivered with DoorDash. You can get drinks, snacks, and other household items in under an hour. I love DoorDash. I've been using it for so long and it's just great to not have to worry about stuff, be able to order food and have it delivered just straight to me. A fun fact, one of my best friends just had his baby shower last week, and I decided a great gift would be get him a DoorDash gift card. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code GAMES2021. That's 25% off up to $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code GAMES2021. Don't forget, that's code GAMES2021, G-A-M-E-S, 2021 for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply. And finally, shout out to DraftKings. The killer crossovers, the nothing but net jumpers, the tenacious throwdowns. Ladies and gentlemen, basketball is back. DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, is celebrating the return to the hardwood by giving new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. That's really exciting. Score big and you can score big cash. And with a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, it's the perfect time to show off your basketball IQ. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code KFGD. This week, new customers can get a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes. All you got to do is enter promo code KFGD to get a free shot at millions in total prizes with your first deposit. That's code KFGD only at DraftKings. There's a minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Remember, promo code KFGD. And we're back, everybody, with even more news stories for you to consume from us. Number five, Fortnite crossing over with yet another IP. Guess what it is, Andy?
Resident Evil.
It's Resident Evil, yeah. A Stars team pack that features cosmetics from Capcom's Resident Evil series, along with skins of series protagonists Chris Redfield and Jill Valentine, is out now. It's pretty cool. You can see the playing a trailer here, but there's the more classic looks of Jill from like RE1 and Chris from that looks like his RE5 outfit. But then there's also his village outfit, and there's a couple different ones, and you know, it's the whole Fortnite thing. They're taking over the world, doing collabs with each and every person out there. What's up, Andy?
They're starting the metaverse. The only image that I had seen of Chris was from Village. I was like, wow, this does not fit at all. Like, what a weird trench coat. And then I thought, like, oh, there's other skin packs. I'm sure they'll have other versions. So that I'm glad that we saw that one, because the trench coat one, just a weird fit, weird vibe for Fortnite.
Yeah, a very, very weird vibe for Fortnite. Not much more to say about that, except for story number six. Here we go. Yesterday, Discussing Films tweeted out the live-action Fortnite movie will reportedly feature two sex scenes. And the source was Variety. Barrett, can you please bring this up?
Of course.
The internet.
Yeah.
The internet was ablaze this weekend, talking about all this news, blessing himself.
Everybody got God.
Oh, wait, does Barrett have the sex scene? Does he have it? Is that what you're trying to bring up? It's the banana and Chun-Li.
Just this tweet here, stop Barrett. It. Yeah, but here's the thing, y'all got God.
Yeah,
you
y'all got
this
God.
Is real. Look at this. That. But more than that, go just even go back to the tweet, Barrett. Discussing Films, but then look at the app. It's Films Discussing. Come on,
This happens literally once a month, where this specific account will tweet out some bullshit that someone will get got, and then that like spreads like a wildfire. Like just mute this account. Or follow it, because it is fucking funny sometimes. We're just like, yeah, this is dumb.
What a God. Horrible stuff out there. But anyways, this is fake. It got a lot of pickup and it got a lot of people talking. So I just wanted to have a PSA news story. At least it's not confirmed that there will be two sex scenes in the Fortnite movie.
There's four.
There still might be. Yeah, exactly. Who the hell knows? Let's move on to story number seven, everyone. The Dark Pictures season one finale, The Devil in Me, is now announced. This comes from Matt Perslow at IGN. A video plays at the end of the recently launched Dark Pictures House of Ashes that Greg Miller's been playing and is really enjoying. He's saying it's his favorite project from them since Until Dawn.
Wow.
Really, really, really cool. Like, what a journey. Actually, I want to bring up Greg's tweets.
They've had a lot of ups and downs, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty, pretty interesting. Give me one sec, guys.
I believe in you that you'll bring it up in less than 5 seconds, Tim.
5 seconds. Wow, that is.
Well, Greg tweets a lot, though.
Yeah, yeah. He does tweet a lot. This man, you have a baby. How do you have so much time to tweet like this?
He also has the voice memo that he sent out to me as it was raining and decided to talk to me. I don't know if you heard that over the weekend, but
chose not to listen to that. Well, I'm not seeing it, but essentially he was saying that like it's crazy how these Dark Pictures anthology games have kind of just been
totally
all over the place. I'm pretty sure I didn't But anyways, he was saying that like this one's really surprising him and the other ones weren't necessarily his vibe. And it seems like he's not alone in that. A lot of the reviews for House of Ashes are saying similar things. But anyways, a video plays at the end of the recently launched Dark Pictures House of Ashes that reveals The Devil in Me, the season one finale of Supermassive Games, the Dark Pictures anthology. This reveals not only what the next game in the anthology will be, but also that the series will be split into seasons. The trailer, which can be seen in a tweet, reveals a grotesque tease of The Devil in Me, which appears to involve a killer creating a mechanized automation from human body parts. This suggests that the next game in the Dark Pictures anthology may be less supernatural than its three predecessors, which all have and feature ghost-slash-monster-type foes and themes. What we may be facing in this next game is something more in the realm of Saw, with a focus on a twisted human killer. I'm very excited about this. I'm also very excited to find out that House of Ashes stars Ashley Tisdale. I learned that yesterday, Andy, and I'm like, well, maybe I need to play this game.
Wow.
The trailer also states that The Devil in Me is the season one finale. We already knew that the Dark Pictures would be made up of 8 games, but it looks as if those 8 will be split into at least 2 seasons. What this means for the next 4 episodes remains unclear, but it may be that the series has a longer break between the release of The Devil in Me, presumably in 2022, and the unknown 5th game.
Tim, are you planning on playing any of these? Like, I know that you just mentioned you're excited for Ashley Tisdale.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't really know what the vibe is with a lot of these. We just mentioned that Greg liked the last one, but I feel like a lot of people's thoughts have been so divided on what every sort of game brings. This one's not good. This one's great. Finally, they're on the right track. Oh, this one's not so good. Like, I feel like it's kind of all over the place with these games.
Well, it kind of seems like Until Dawn was a major success, major hit. Everybody loved it. And then the first Dark Pictures Maid of Medan, I think it was called. That one, people were kind of like, ooh, this ain't it. And then the second one came out, and people were like, oh, it's better than, I forget what it was called, but it's better than the first one, but like, it's still not Until Dawn. This seems to be the one where people are like, hey, this is actually really good. And not quite Until Dawn levels, but like, it's really good. So it's good that they're on like an upward trajectory with it, right? And especially if they're going to take a break before the final 4 come in. Like, that seems like a good idea for them. Because these did come out, I got to say, a lot more quickly and frequently than I would have expected. I know there were some delays along the way at some point, but like, the fact that we're already 3 in is pretty crazy for this thing, right?
Yeah, definitely. That definitely flew by. And I think one thing about the series as a whole that really just intrigues me is how gorgeous the visuals are. Like, I'm not sure what engine they're using. I'm not sure what they're using to run these games, but damn, every time there's a new one that comes out, it seems like this is a tech demo for next gen tech that it won't be out for a couple of years. It's always on that sort of high of a level production. So that's great that Greg is liking the most recent one.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that. Like, honestly, him liking it that much and having Ashley Tisdale, I'm like, hey, this might be a fun thing for me to try out maybe during Halloween or something. So, and The Devil in Me definitely sounds more my vibe. I like the Saw stuff, so I'm definitely in that. Maybe we'll get you to play these on stream, Andy.
No, don't say that.
Maybe.
How about you play it?
That sounds like a great extra life kind of thing.
How about you play it?
I'll play it with you, Andy. Let's do it together. I'll let you make the choices, and I'll play it. Anyways, moving on to the next story. This is awesome. What a world we live in. Story number 8, Wu-Tang Clan RPG in the works at Microsoft. It's claimed. This comes from Jordan Midler at Video Game Chronicles. On the Xbox 2 podcast, Jez Corden, a journalist who has recently revealed information about other Microsoft projects, says that he heard back in July that Microsoft is making a Wu-Tang game. He went on to clarify that he initially wasn't clear if this was referring to Wu-Tang, the martial arts style, or the popular hip-hop collective. He was later told that the game uses Wu-Tang Clan lore and that the game soundtrack was created by the Wu-Tang Clan. GamesBeat journalist Jeff Grubb, never heard of him, also corroborated the claims, stating on a video show that he understood the information was correct. Currently in development at Brass Lion Entertainment, the game is said to be a third-person fantasy RPG. And it will feature seasonal content and will be a couple dozen hours in length. Corden also revealed the game is melee combat-focused and that it will support 4-player co-op. Brass Lion Entertainment was founded in 2017. Its first game, Corner Wolves, is said to be an action role-playing game set in 1990s Harlem. This is the latest in several recent Microsoft-related leaks reported by Corden, who in October 21, 2021, yeah, claimed that Obsidian's upcoming Avowed would be Skyrim meets Outer Worlds. According to Windows Central, sources said to be familiar with the studio's plans, the first-person game will include multiple class playstyles and take inspiration from the Elder Scrolls Skyrim's two-handed combat system. Players will be able to wield two weapons simultaneously, a combination of weapons and magic, or unleash some of the game's stronger spells using two-handed magic. So there you go. Pretty cool.
I mean... I don't know. I feel like it's probably going to be something that comes and goes and it's really quick and we kind of forget it even was a thing. I hope it's a good game, right? Like, I hope it's something that is meaty and has substance and it's not just like this cash grab that looks and plays like garbage. And important to note, Tim, Redman not in Wu-Tang. Redman yes. not in Wu-Tang. We were corrected a lot by a lot of people who were like, you fucking dumb losers. Redman yeah. was never in Wu-Tang, you idiots. And I was like, shit, you're right. All right, fine.
You are right. Admittedly, I am not I'm a fan of Wu-Tang, but I am not an expert. I am not even I don't know that much at all. I just like
but songs. We know Method Man and Redman. Like, why is connected. It that much of a exactly. stretch?
Yeah, yeah. But I get that it's wrong. But with that, I'm with you where it's like the chances of this being great are pretty slim, but I feel like Wu-Tang Clan are one of the rare artists out there that do these kind of crossover things that like it's always 50-50 on like this could be dope as shit or it could just be whatever or it could not happen. You know,
yeah,
a lot of options there. But there's I think that there's a chance that this could be something special. It sounds like it might be a little too ambitious, but when you add a lot of the words they put together and you add Wu-Tang Clan to it, like if they go into the lore and they turn it into a thing, a fantasy RPG, I think it might work and it might be just different enough and fresh enough that it could be something special for the more traditional gamers that aren't just Wu-Tang Clan fans, right? Like, I don't think that this is necessarily for the Wu-Tang Clan fans. I think this is them being like, yo, we're gamers. We like this. So let's make a dope game that happens to feature our lore.
This just has like PS2 and PS3 written all over it. That's my thing with it. It's kind of that era of those studios that are a lot smaller of scale that kind of eventually get eaten up by bigger studios. Like, when I just think of old studios of the past, this reminds me of something that would have existed in like the early 2000s, late 90s. And you saying like, I hope, you know, it could be terrible, could be bad, could not happen at all. Give me a good chuckle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, but what you just said, what's old is new again now, right? Like we're hitting this point where more and more and more games are, you know, PS2 era, PS3 era, whereas like not too long ago, we were like talking about retro being NES, SNES. And it's like, there is an even N64, like everything's evolving. And it's like, I can imagine this working out if they do just make a super dope PS2, PS3 Wu-Tang RPG, right? But we'll see. Moving on to story number 9, Overwatch reveals McCree's new name. This comes from Ash Parrish at Polygon. Jesse McCree, Overwatch's cowboy hero, has been renamed Cole Cassidy. The name change is part of a number of updates Blizzard is making to its games to remove references to problematic people or themes that have come to light in the wake of several discrimination and harassment suits filed against the company. Last month, WoW removed NPCs that referenced former senior creative director Alex Afrasiabi, who was named in the harassment suit as participating in the infamous Cosby Suite incident. Jesse McCree, a former lead designer, was also a part of that incident and for whom Overwatch's cowboy character was named. When those allegations were publicized, casters refused to say the character's name during Overwatch League matches. The Overwatch team later stated they were in the process of changing his name. In a tweet, the Overwatch team framed the name change as Cassidy coming to terms with his checkered past and giving up his outlaw name, providing a clever in-game explanation for a change that was because of real-world forces. Quote, to make this new Overwatch better, to make things right, he has to be honest with his team and himself, the announcement tweet says. The name change goes live tomorrow, October 26th. And then also from Blizzard, as we introduce a new name, you might have the desire to do the same. Starting this on October 22nd and continuing through November 5th, all players will be offered a free battle tag name change. This applies to anyone who does not currently have a free name change available. Existing name changes will not stack for future use. Not much to say here. But yeah, really interesting.
I do think that this is super important to the devs at Blizzard and the people wanting to correct this course. And I think it's I'm sure they're like, yes, this is the right change. And we're doing this because we care about it genuinely. I hope that the heads of Blizzard don't think that this is enough.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that this isn't just one of those, we're giving them this, so let's just keep on, you know, let's just keep on going on about our days. I hope that, like, we actually see real genuine change, and small things like this are definitely necessary and valid and I think overall good for the state of Overwatch and for a lot of the community and player base. Of course, there's going to be some people, you know, hating it and talking shit, but there always will be. But I just hope that, like, I hope the pressure stays on. You know what I mean?
Totally. I do think I agree with you. This is a great move. It's important. And the fact that they're acting on it is awesome. And they could have not. You know, I think that it's great that we're in an era where things like this, changes like this that are necessary are happening. And I appreciate that the devs obviously care and they're trying to make it make sense as much as it needs to in world. Like, I think they're nailing this. Good job. Keep it up and keep fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, story number 11. Guerrilla gives a closer look at Horizon Forbidden West's new abilities. Barrett, if you could please bring up this PlayStation blog. There's some GIFs I just want to look at because they're fucking incredible. Nibel over on Twitter has a good breakdown of what they talk about in this blog post. Full DualSense support throughout each mechanic. 12 Valor Surge attacks that are supers, with each having 3 levels. Machines and enemies can fight in groups, and there are plenty of new weapons and some returning ones. Aloy can now wall jump. Some of the interesting little bits I got from this are, one of the focus points that's influenced all our combat decisions was increased player choice, and we applied this to everything: melee, weapons, outfit, skills, and other new mechanics. We wanted to give players more tools, depth, and dials to play with. This comes from the lead combat designer over at Guerrilla. There's a number of other subtle yet impactful additions that enable more dynamic gameplay. Just to name a few examples, Aloy can wall jump, leap away from a climb surface, high vault, and more. While these might sound like small things, combined, they make for engaging environmental challenges and more player options. We put a lot of effort into creating more choice and depth for the players and are super excited to see how people will play as Aloy, with so many new possibilities of skills, weapons, and gear she can obtain throughout the mysterious Forbidden West. We had a lot of fun creating cool and powerful combinations for players to discover, and we hope people will enjoy the game when it launches. Those words alone kind of sound like just like a lot of buzzwords and a lot of like, hey, we're making a game and we're excited about it and you should be too. But those words combined with these GIFs that we're looking at, like these parts of the video, it really kind of seems like they're like, look, we don't even need to say this. You can just watch it. But I love that the idea is they want the mobility. They want this to be a step forward and an evolution for what we expect from this style of game. And as I was seeing this, I was like, this has Andy Cortez written all over it.
This has like some of the better gameplay people on Twitter making awesome videos and sizzle reels and like, check out this cool ass move that I did. It looks so fluid. Everything, like all the sort of contextual animations of her grabbing the thing to the slide, they're nailing it right now, dude. Like this is a welcome surprise that I did not even know happened this morning until I'm scrolling down the list that you sort of compiled, because this was a pretty busy morning. But yeah, this looks really, really damn good, Tim.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You can go check out the PlayStation blog for a lot more like details on the whole interview. Really fascinating read, and I am very excited for this game, and this definitely got me more excited. There's a very long doc that me and Andy are looking at here, and I skipped a story. Story number 10, God of War PC version is being handled by an external developer. Sony's confirmed that the upcoming God of War PC port will be handled by Canadian studio Jetpack Interactive. The company previously provided engineer support for Dark Souls PC version. In a statement provided to Ars Technica, Sony said that the original God of War developer, Sony Santa Monica, is overseeing the PC version's development, which is good, which is being handled by Jetpack Interactive. The studio, based in Vancouver, is a port-focused developer who has previously worked with EA on Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare 2, and NBA Live 15 and 14. It also completed the PS4 ports of Orcs Must Die Unchained for Robot Entertainment. The reason I'm making this a news story is the choice of Jetpack Interactive may come as a surprise, since Square acquired PC port specialist Nixes earlier this year. This deal was only announced in July, though, so if the God of War PC version had been
since
in development...
Sony, by the way, you said Square.
Sony, there we go. That may be the reason Jetpack and not Nixes are handling the port. We expect Nixes to be involved in further projects, though, since Sony has made a commitment to bring PlayStation games to PC. So I just think it's kind of interesting that, you know, they are committing so hard to PC, clearly, with God of War and Uncharted and you know, you got to expect a lot more in the future.
Horizon.
They've already done Horizon. Yeah, exactly. So it's interesting to me that this isn't Nixus. You'd imagine that the group that they kind of acquired would have been the ones working on whatever they had planned. So I just think it's worth bringing up, like, I don't think that they have this firm commitment to a vision and plan for what all their first party titles are going to look like on PC yet, but they're working towards it. And we're still kind of in that phase of them figuring out what works, which is interesting. And I know for you being a big PC player, like, how excited are you about all this?
Well, Nixus is working on the Bloodborne port, Tim. We all kind of forgot that. Remember that. Keep that in mind, Tim. Keep that in mind.
That's not actually confirmed.
Please don't everybody send it to the blogs, everybody.
Send it to the blogs.
We're lying right now on the show. It is kind of interesting that they don't go with the one studio that they did acquire, but it does give me a lot of I feel relieved that at least it seems like Santa Monica is pretty involved in the overlooking of the whole process. There's nothing worse than a console game. Well, there's a lot of bad things in the world, but you know, when a console game that you really, really enjoyed goes to PC and doesn't perform like you know it should, and you're looking at it, and it's not because of PC gaming, it's because of just bad optimization. That's a pretty heartbreaking thing, and that's something that can be... The long-lasting effects can happen for so long, Tim, where it's like, we look at Nier Automata, and that never got... That finally got patched after about 4 years on Steam, you know, because Platinum didn't do the port, and, you know, another studio came and did the port. And it's always heartbreaking when that does happen, so... I hope that they continue to be diligent about making sure that these games work and perform well on PC. I remember when Horizon first came out, I wasn't really too excited about how it was performing. And I know ever since then, we've gotten some patches. But Death Stranding definitely, I think, did a really good job on PC. And so it's great to sort of see the progress being made. And the care and love is there for sure.
Yeah, totally. And our final news story of the day, there's a new Witcher Season 2 image. Barrett, if you could please bring this up just for a second, we can look at him. He's beautiful.
Look at that man. Is this... Holy shit.
I feel like looking at this, like, isn't this like almost the same exact image teaser for Season 1, but he just kind of looks a little weathered.
Battered.
Yeah.
There's more snow now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It does look like that one sequence from Season 1, though, for sure. God damn, like... This dude, he's just like, that's a man, Tim. You know?
That is a man.
That's a man. Andy, I could watch make a PC any time of the day.
I just want to squat up with him in a video game and just talk like, oh, what sense? You're using 6.0 sense? Yeah, because I go lower for my mouse space. Yeah, I just want to talk shop with the guy, Tim.
Andy, you talking to shop with Henry Cavill is so far away. If I wanted to know what was coming to Mom and Grop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Yeah, I didn't have the music loaded, so I did it myself.
I appreciate it, Barrett. I appreciate it a lot. Out today, we got Zombo Buster Rising on Switch, and more importantly, it's here, everybody. No, we don't. No, we don't. We have the N64 and Sega Genesis games via Nintendo Switch Online. Before the show started, I tried to see if it was out, and it was not yet. So hopefully sometime soon it'll be there, because I can't wait to play some old video games. I want some Star Fox 64 in OLED, Andy. That's all that I want. Portable. Some new dates for you. We got Apex Legends Escape coming November 2nd. This is something you and Bless?
Yeah, me and Bless got to participate in the event. Like any other event, we shouldn't have teamed up because we got our shit kicked in every game we played. But the new map is really neat. It's a pretty goddamn big map. Reminds me a lot of King's Canyon. It's essentially a tropical version of King's Canyon. There are a bunch of spider eggs around the world, spider nests that you can shoot, and spiders will pop out. You kill them, they drop loot. They're little tiny little bugs, but it's also funny. They're just called spider. Like, that's the name of the... It's like, oh, you could have called it something cool and like crawlers or some shit like that. But one thing sort of neat about this world is what we're seeing right now is these sort of thruster, I forgot what they call them in the game, but they replaced the balloon lifts in the other Apex maps where you shoot up the balloon and then you can redeploy and go somewhere else. These things are scattered around the world and they will just launch you from one spot to the next. I think they're called like maybe phase cannons or something dope like that. The world is pretty sick and it seems to be a bit more dangerous. They wanted it to feel more like there are a lot more PvE elements. There's a lot of like monsters and creatures that can kill you and kind of distract you enough so that another team can just come kick your shit in, which is kind of what our experience was, Tim.
Yeah. Well, hey, you guys all get to experience
gravity cannons. I was close. I said phase cannons, right? Yeah, gravity cannons. Yeah.
That is November 2nd that's coming. And you know what? There you go. That has been your Kind of Funny Games Daily. I'll do a quick squad up for you just because this one I think is fun. And I'm not sure if it was already done, but either way, I want to get Gary some more friends out there. This comes from Gary, a.k.a. G-A-R-Y-S-Y, Gary Sy, on Oculus. A best friend in Bangkok, so in a good time zone to play early slash late and hype a squad to a victory royale in Population 1. Or chill and putt some mini golf while we debate junk food. Shout out to Kevin for setting up his VR. If you're looking for a best friend out there to hang out in VR and play, I don't even know what Population 1 is, but play that or whatever, definitely hit up Gary S.Y. on Oculus and have a good time. Sounds like a blast. Tomorrow's hosts are going to be Blessing and Janet. On Wednesday, it is Blessing and me. Thursday, it is Tam and me. And Friday, it is Blessing and Janet. Going to be a great week. Gary is still out because he's taking care of that beautiful baby. That's how babies work these days. They happen, and then we lose people. So here we are, Andy. It's me and you. And me and you are going to continue the fun over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames.
No, you're wrong.
Oh, yeah. That's a good call. It's impossible. There's no way. No way with the amount of news stories we had today. Let's see.
The Fortnite thing is fake. Yeah, we know.
Nanobiologist says Dark Pictures Anthology second game was Little Hope. Thank you for that. Tim said he was surprised that the Dark Pictures Anthology released so quickly, but they were supposed to release a new one every 6 months for a total of 8 games. I'm not wrong. I'm still surprised. I know what they said. I'm still surprised we've gotten as many.
That's
of these.
A lot of game development.
Yeah. And that's it, baby. That's it. See, we fucking nailed it, Andy. Crushed it. What a show. Honestly,
asked, does Apex have arachnophobia settings? I don't believe so. But they don't even look like spiders, honestly. They just look like, you know, when you know the little things in the flood, the little enemies in the of the flood in Halo, they kind of look
fucking
like that.
Creepy, man.
They're just these like little things. I guess so. Yeah, but also I fought a giant snake in Sekiro over the weekend, and that was the most horrifying I've ever done in a video game.
Yeah, and
terrible.
It wouldn't have been great if like that snake
if it
just
wasn't
like
a snake.
Snakes. Anyways, love you guys. Bye.